Isabel, pages 153 to 156. Somewhere on the streets of Florida, 1994, 2 days from home. Rain slashed Isabel as she shoveled water out of the boat. Scoop, pitch, scoop, pitch. The bottom of the boat filled as fast as I could bail it out. Isabel, her mother, her father, her grandfather, Louis, Ivan, Senor Castillo, they all worked feverishly, none of them talking, not that they could hear each other, over the storm. The only one not bailing were Senor Castillo, who was looking like a ghost, and Amara, who clung to the rudder with white-knuckled hands and tried to keep the boat turned into the churning waves so it wouldn't capsize. The engine hadn't worked since their escape from the tanker. The storm clouds turned day into night, and the driving rain soaked Isabel to the bone. She shivered in the cold wind, her feet numb in the water sloshing in the bottom of the boat. Sea spray stung her eyes, and in between scoops of water, she dragged her arm across her face, trying to wipe away the saltwater tears. As she watched the surging waves, Isabel remembered the last time she had seen her abuelita, her grandma. She remembered Lita's hand reaching out for help as the tide swept her away. Isabel had been 9 years old. Her parents had sent her to stay with Lito and Lita in their little shack on the coast. They hadn't said why, but Isabel was old enough to know her parents had been fighting again. They wanted to be alone while they worked things out. All that spring, Isabel had waited without joy in the ocean, waiting for the storm to come that would tear her family apart. Then the real storm had come. It wasn't a hurricane. It was bigger than a hurricane. A gigantic cyclone that stretched from Canada, drove down through the United States and across Cuba and into Central America. Later, they would call it the storm of the century, but to Isabel, it was the storm. The shrieking wind ripped off roofs of houses, pulled palm trees straight out of the ground. The rain fell sideways, hail shattered windows like never-ending shotgun blasts, and the ocean rose up like a giant hand and reached the island, over Lito and Lita's little house by the sea, smothering the house in a giant paw and dragging the shattered pieces back into its lair. Lito and Lita hadn't known the storm was coming, or they wouldn't have been there. They would have been inland, found higher ground. Castro had promised he would protect them, but he didn't. Not then. Not Isabel's grandmother. Lito had been able to hold on to Isabel, but Lita had been swept away. She slipped under the waves, her arms still reaching for Lito and for Isabel. And that was the last time they'd ever seen her. Lito's arm found Isabel again now and wrapped her in a hug. "I know what you're thinking," he sighed close to her ear where she could hear him. "I'm thinking about it too." "I miss her," Isabel told her grandfather. "I miss her too," Lito said, "every day." Real tears came to Isabel's eyes now, and Lito hugged her tighter. "That was her song's end," Lito whispered, "but ours plays on. Come, keep bailing, or soon it'll be up to our eyeballs." Isabel nodded and went back to scooping water. What if her life was a song? No, not a song. A life was a symphony with several different movements and complicated musical forms. A song was something shorter, a smaller piece of life. This journey was a song, Isabel realized. A song con bono, and each part of it was a verse. The first verse had been the riot, the blast of the trumpets, the rat-a-tat of a snare drum, then the pre-chorus of the trading her trumpet for gasoline, the piano that gave the sun its rhythm. Then in the chorus itself, leaving home. They were still leaving home, still hadn't gotten to where they were going. They would return to the chorus again and again before they were done. But what was the refrain? How many more verses would there be before they got to the climax of the song? The brash moment when the end of the song Cabano that echoed the refrain, and then coda, those brief few notes that tied it all together. She couldn't think about that now. All she could do now was scoop water and pray they didn't drown in the mad Congo solo that drummed against the side of their tiny metal boat.